The Bookhouse is an independent bookstore with two locations in New Jersey, Millburn and Long Branch. Are you the guy who says they like to support indie bookstores? Good. Then be that guy. Come shop at The Bookhouse. Books, puzzles, games, coffee, cards, live author events, comedy nights, and most important, a real sense of community where actual human beings engage with one another. The Bookhouse in downtown Millburn and at Pier Village in Long Branch. That's The Bookhouse. Independent, local, quaint as fuck. Follow us on Instagram and come visit our stores.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Book and Film Globe podcast. I am your host, Neil Pollack, the greatest living American writer, and the editor-in-chief of Book and Film Globe, www.bookandfilmglobe.com. We cover the worlds of books and film and streaming TV and so much more, and we bring you this podcast every week, free of charge. And the only thing we ask at this time is that you, if you're listening to this podcast on one of the many platforms on which it's available, to like us somehow or leave us a review, 5-star review preferably, and you know, just tell people about it and spread the word, because we're getting close. By next year, at some point, we're going to hit our 200th episode, and we want to just keep on going forever and ever, because movies and TV and books don't seem to be stopping, even though the industry is changing. This week, we have a fine show for you. We're going to talk to contributor Laura Roberts for the first time on this show. She covers romance novels and also some romance movies for us, and she reviewed It Ends With Us, which is a popular adaptation starring Blake Lively of a best-selling Colleen Hoover novel. It was about time that got made, and Laura has some very interesting thoughts about It Ends With Us. But first, we're going to talk to Pablo Gallaga about Alien Romulus, the latest visitation to the world of Alien and the Weyland-Yutani Corporation and the evil xenomorphs and all the people who run afoul of them. And Pablo will be right back after this musical interlude to talk to me about it.
Oh, my God.
Oh. Annie, open the door. Annie, open the door.
What are you doing?
Annie,
open the door.
It's all right. I'm going to get you out. Don't look over there.
I need you to open that door right now. Come on, open the door. Why aren't you out? Run right now.
Our movie of the week is Alien Romulus, the latest in the Alien series, the Alien franchise. I feel like there've been a lot of Alien movies. Pablo Gallaga is our Alien expert, or our horror movie expert, really, and he's here today to talk to me about this endlessly unfolding saga. Hello, Pablo.
Hey, Neil. Thanks for having me.
So you count the Alien versus Predator movies as canon for the Alien saga?
They are technically not canon. So in total, if you include those, you've got 9 Alien films, 7 in the main series run.
Look, I'm not a... I found I don't like horror much, and the alien bursting out of John Hurt's stomach scene is probably one of the 2 or 3 scariest scenes in film history, iconically so. And, you know, the James Cameron Alien sequel was more of an action flick than a horror flick. I'm able to enjoy the original Alien just because it's just so well made, and Aliens is also a lot of fun. But I wonder, like, why has this franchise become such a Baroque saga?
It's honestly my favorite franchise, regardless of the quality. There's just something about, you know, the Giger art style of it that, you know, has prevailed this whole time. I mean, obviously been sort of bastardized into just like a commercial monster type thing, whereas his art was very profound. No, there's just something about that idea of something bursting out of you. It's just, you know, cosmic horror. I love it. And I wish this film had been better.
Right, but they kept the concept that the alien can burrow into you and then burst out of you, right? That is all still in there.
Yeah, that's consistent. And the later films have experimented with some other things. Like the last film, Alien Covenant, had a backburster, which, you know, if you think about it, makes sense that a creature may not just want to go out that one way through the chest. Mm. It's not just the films. Alien has prevailed in comics. If you read the Dark Horse comics in the 90s, As I mentioned in the review, it is now a property owned by Disney, of all places.
Really?
And it's a Marvel property. So the comics have continued as a Marvel comic series, and they've been quite good. There's a lot of ideas there. And the frustrating thing is that the films don't seem to tap them very well. Like, if you read the comics, like, they go off in some very interesting places. There's a lot to dig into with this property that, you know, the films really need to do.
All right. So we'll talk about the quality of Romulus in a minute, because as you said, you didn't like it much and you gave it a fairly negative review on the site. But I'm just curious about certain things about this world, right? Like, you know, the initial Alien was pretty much just a monster movie set on a spaceship. A very simple, high concept movie. But I feel this has become like a really baroque melodrama about this corporation trying to like steal alien technology. I mean, I don't understand exactly what's going on, because I admit that I am not fully versed in this universe.
So you hit it right on the head. Even the original film is this commentary on corporate greed. And if you look at the films in terms of, you know, the first one is blue collar truckers in space put into this bad situation by, you know, their corporate overlords. Aliens is, you know, Marines in space. Prometheus, which is the first prequel that Ridley Scott did, would be scientists in space. Alien 3, prisoners in space. Covenant, colonists in space. And now with Romulus, you've put some 20-somethings out there in space that kind of have nothing going for them. So that's an interesting tactic that they did here.
Like unemployed Gen Z college dropout types.
Basically, yeah, exactly. Yeah. With you know, mounting debt. So yeah, it's been a through line for the entire series that the Weyland-Yutani Corporation is after this potential bioweapon. Romulus actually has an interesting take on that I won't spoil. But yeah, it's as much about corporate greed as it is about the alien itself.
Okay, so there are multiple villains. And I guess the question is, you know, what doesn't work about Romulus? Because it was kind of hailed as this reboot for the franchise, because they have a new director, Fede Alvarez, who has a strong, you know, horror chops. And, you know, there was some excitement building before the movie came out, which is, I feel like, has been tamped down a little bit now that it's opened.
Yeah, it's a stealth requel. So it takes place between the events of the first film and the second film. For me, I felt like I was very engaged with it for the first two thirds of the film. They really did a good job with their production design to make it feel like it was in that time period where you've got the retro futurism of the ship. It feels like you're looking at something, you know, that was designed in 1979, thinking of what the future could look like. You know, there's some interesting ideas with the horror set pieces once they get started. It's got a bit of a slow start, like before anything actually really happens. But there's some good world building. And I mentioned in the review, it feels like the first time that a sequel to Alien just feels like it's in that universe, because the series has been sort of like a director showcase, right? Like you've had Cameron, you had Fincher, you had Whedon writing Alien Resurrection and directed by Jean-Paul Genet. So it's been like just this inconsistent sort of mishmash of different styles and director visions. But yeah, it felt good. And then I think in the last third and in the last act, it started to do the fan service. It started to feel like, hey, you remember this from Alien? You remember this from Alien 2? You know, I think even in the kind of climax, and this was intentional. I think Fede Alvarez has mentioned that he wanted to draw from every previous film in the series. But it does feel like a retread at that point where you're seeing things that you've seen before. And that's what took me out of it.
That's a very strange approach. But it also strikes me as a very Disney approach, right?
Exactly. It's becoming all too common with what we're seeing in the MCU. It's all about, well, in the MCU, I think it's more fan service, but you're seeing it in other franchises as well, like Ghostbusters. It's just this nostalgia mining, and it just doesn't feel like a way forward for these franchises that people want to see new things from.
Right, like the upcoming Beetlejuice sequel. You're watching the trailer for that, and there's, you know, someone referring to Winona Ryder's character as a legend.
Yeah.
I'm like, how would anyone even know she existed? You know? I understand that in the Alien franchise, it's a little more... there is this corporation that is sort of the center of it all, right?
Yeah, and that's also in the comics and the video games. Like, you just always know that that other shoe is going to drop, where the corporation is screwing people over. There's also this common thread of synthetic people and androids, which is actually one of the strengths of Romulus. David Johnson's character, Andy, is, I mean, it's just a great performance. And they try some new things with having like a synthetic character, whereas usually they're just outright evil or like secretly evil, and they reveal themselves to be just like the villain of the film. But no, this one's a bit more nuanced.
Yeah, I mean, everything I've read, I don't know the actor David Johnson, but everything I've read has been, you sort of singled him out as the best part of the movie.
Yeah, he's mostly been in television. He was Gus on Industry, which I never saw, but you know, I think that's where he mostly is coming from.
And the lead actor is Kaylee Spaney, is that right? I don't know. She was Priscilla Presley in the Sofia Coppola movie. And was also in Civil War, which came out earlier this summer.
Yeah, those are her two big films. Yeah, Kaylee Spaney. And she's good in this as well. You know, there's only so much that they give a lead actress to do in an alien film. You know, you're just
right. They got to wear a muscle shirt, and they have to operate a machine gun, basically, right?
Yeah, eventually that, or a flamethrower. Yeah,
a flamethrower. Be covered in like oil,
and like, you know, drool from a xenomorph. Yeah.
Drool. Yeah. Yeah. The xenomorphs. All right. Let's talk about the monsters themselves. Like, do they have any redeeming qualities? Is there going to be like a humanizing xenomorph moment?
It's funny you should ask, and I don't want to spoil anything, but if you can think back to Alien Resurrection, I don't know if you're familiar with that, but there is, and again, with the company, with Weyland-Yutani always experimenting, trying to, you know, bioengineer things. In that film, there was a alien-human hybrid. And in recent years, there's been kind of a reassessment of Alien Resurrection, where I think it's the worst one in the series. But, you know, the climax of that film is that, I guess, like, there's a hybrid birthed, and it's actually kind of cute in a strange way. Like, it's got this sort of expressive face like a puppy. You know, obviously, like, it's still scary and it's horrific because it's still part xenomorph. But yeah, so many people that grew up with that film now are looking back and like, oh, I wish they hadn't killed that hybrid. He was so cute. And
if I were to do it, maybe, you know, we have like humans hunting like nice, friendly family xenomorphs on the xenomorph planet.
I mean, that's something that I believe happens in the comics. You know, they do venture to that planet. And I mean, if you remember back to when Alien 3 was being teased, you know, that film was originally supposed to take place on Earth. Like, that was the teaser, and everyone was so hyped for that. And that ultimately isn't what happened. Noah Hawley is working on a TV series, I believe, for FX. That is Alien Earth. That is the official title for it. I believe it's coming, I don't know if it's later this year or next year. That's exciting. And that's something that could possibly right the ship for this franchise. Because, I mean, he's great. And he's done some great stuff show running.
Right. He's the creator and showrunner of Fargo. And an Austin resident.
Yeah, yeah. Good stuff.
So, yeah. All right. Well, Alien Romulus may not be the pinnacle of the Alien franchise, but if you like this franchise, what's the Weyland Otani? Not Otani.
Yutani.
Yeah, I don't want to say Otani because that's
baseball.
That slanders the greatest living baseball player. The Weyland Yutani Corporation. If you want to see what they're up to, Alien Romulus is in theaters now. Pablo Gallaga is not a xenomorph. He is our horror movie expert, and he talked to me today about it. Thank you so much, Pablo.
Thanks, Neil.
What's your name?
Lily. You?
Ryle. I tried to be good. I know that I know that I know that if I ever restricted to a Polaroid and it's not.
The summer movie season is at an end. We just talked to Pablo Gallaga about Alien Romulus. But the week before, a movie called It Ends With Us came out, and that appealed to a very different genre of filmmakers, and it's based on a very different genre of writing. I guess it comes from the romance novel side of things, and our in-house romance novel expert, Laura Roberts, saw the movie and is here today to talk to me about it. Hello, Laura.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to the show. This is your first time on this world covering podcast, so it's good to have you.
Thanks for having me. I'm about to incur a lot of wrath, I feel like, but I'm ready for it.
we like wrath. So, all right. So you saw It Ends With Us. Now, It Ends With Us is based on a novel by Colleen Hoover, who's one of the best-selling novelists in the world. And you yourself are a romance novelist or have written some romance novels. So I wanted you to see the movie because I kind of wanted you to unpack the tropes of the genre and to see how well it fits into it. So, you know, this is not a movie. This is not my genre. It is not a genre that I tend to watch a lot of movies in. So does this work as a romance? I know that it's really a movie about domestic violence.
So for me, I still feel like having seen it, I haven't read the book, but I read before I went into the movie and was just like, you know what? I don't think this is going to work as a romance. It is about domestic violence. And it follows the whole relationship, which is supposed to be romantic, but you can see all the red flags as we're going along. And you're just kind of like, uh-oh, where's this going? What's going to happen? And it all happens. And you're just like, really? She's still there. She's still in it. Okay. And you see the other guy that's kind of waiting on the sidelines. And he's like, you got to get out of this. You know, everyone's telling her this doesn't seem like a good thing. And she keeps going with it. Even her best friend, who is the sister of the guy that she's in the relationship with, when she first finds them together, like in the morning, she stumbles in and they're there together. She's like, yeah, I don't think this is a good idea, but, you know, I'm leaving, so.
All right, so let's talk about this a little bit. So the movie stars Blake Lively.
Right.
She plays a florist named Lily Blossom Bloom. And that shows you exactly the level of literary sophistication that, you know, Colleen Hoover is working with. And then the sister's played by Jenny Slate.
Yes.
Which is, I thought...
I love Jenny Slate's character.
Sure. Yeah, no one has had ever has a bad word to say about her. And then the guy's name, he's like this dangerous bad boy's name. Is his name Ryle? That's the character's name?
Ryle. At first I was kind of like, is it supposed to be Riley? Because it's R-Y-L-E. But it is Ryle, like Kyle, but with an R.
I guess technically that's a name. So, and do they meet cute? Do they meet at a party? Does he come into the flower shop? And she's like a goth florist. What's going on there?
Yes. Okay. So basically she has broken into his building and she's on the rooftop of his building thinking about what has just happened because the movie opens with her father's funeral and she walks out of it because she's supposed to be giving the eulogy and she can't think of anything good to say about her dad because he was abusive to her mother.
Okay.
So she walks out of that and then she's on this rooftop, like kind of thinking things over, I guess. And this Ryle character bursts in and is kicking all the patio chairs. And we're just like, oh, and she's kind of like, I didn't mean to see that, but I'm just chilling out here. And he sees her, she's like right on the edge of the building, just like smoking a cigarette or something. And he's just like, can you please get off of that ledge? Because I'm getting really nervous seeing you over there. And she says she won't get down. So he gets up there with her. So that's kind of their meet cute.
So he's violent and he saves her at the same time.
Yeah. So it's like a super weird meeting. It becomes more cute, I guess, as it goes along, because he seems like a charming individual and he like reveals that he's a neurosurgeon and she's like, okay. And she doesn't really.
He's a neurosurgeon?
Yes. Because she's like, well, what do you do? And he's like, I'm a neurosurgeon. And she's like, sure you are. Okay, whatever.
What was she doing on top of his building?
I guess she lives in the neighborhood and I'm not really sure where she lives because I don't think they ever even show her apartment except just kind of like she's in her bedroom sketching and then we don't know where she lives. So I had assumed she also lived in the same building and was therefore up on this roof because she lived there. But she tells him, I don't even live in this building. I broke into your building and I'm just like chilling on your roof because you have.
Why didn't she just go home to chill? I don't get it.
It's really strange. I don't know.
All right, so this is the first logical inconsistency.
Yes.
And then, okay, so then they enter into a relationship and eventually he starts doing violent things to her?
Yes. So it's kind of like he tells her on that very first meeting, I don't really do relationships. And she kind of makes fun of him and says, well, how many of the women you've told this to has this worked on? And he's like, all of them. So she's just like, well, I'm going to have to break your streak here and we're not going to, you know, and he gets a phone call. He has to go off to the ER because he is, in fact, a neurosurgeon. So he has to go into surgery and he has to leave. And she's just kind of like, OK, whatever. And thinks she's never going to see him again. And then she's just like just starting her floral shop. So she's opening this floral shop. It's like a building that she's having to like clean up a lot of stuff. So she's in there cleaning and Jenny Slate kind of like stumbles in and she's like, hello, what's going on in here? And she has her pod or her ear pod in and she has to take it out to be like, what's happening? And she's just like, oh, I was just passing by because I see this like empty store all the time. And I was wondering what it was going to become and what does it look like inside? And
she's what like, city does like, this, is this, what cities does this take place
like,
in?
What is Boston? Going- and I kept forgetting that it was Boston and not New York. Cause I was like, wait, what are they doing? And I'm like, where is this? And it's supposed to be Boston. I don't know anything about Boston, so I can't really vouch for that, but it's not New York.
It doesn't sound much like Boston. I suppose it just sounds like, I mean, it, you know, it doesn't sound like this. The, a sense of place is really, this isn't no, The Departed.
Not, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
This isn't Mystic River we're talking about.
Some people were kind of attempting maybe a Boston accent, but we weren't really sure where they were going with that because they kind of came in and out of it. So, yeah.
All right. And then eventually Ryle starts beating her. Do we have to watch that happen?
So let's see what happens. So basically she ends up hiring Jenny Slate. She doesn't know Jenny Slate is Ryle's sister.
To work at the flower shop. She hires Jenny Slate.
Jenny Slate become like BFFs working at this flower shop. And then when they finally launch the shop, the first customer to come in is her brother. And then it's like, wait a minute. Oh, we know each other. Do we? How do we know each other? Blah, blah, blah. So it's like a weird, another like meeting basically. And then Jenny Slate's like, how do you, what's happening? Why is this happening?
Right.
So yeah, it's an awkward.
Awkward. And then, they fall for each other. They begin dating and then he pushes.
So one of their first dates, I guess, that they go on is they were supposed to be going to some, no, it was that she was going out to dinner with her mom and the mom had chosen the restaurant. And so she was just going to go by herself. But he's like, your mom's in town. I totally want to meet this person because the mother of the woman that I love. And she's like, oh, so he kind of invites himself along. And so she's introducing him to the mom and they're like chit chatting and whatever. And then the man who is running the restaurant comes by and is asking like, can I get you guys a drink? And she like looks up and sees this guy who is her first love, this guy Atlas. And he is the one who owns this restaurant. And she didn't know
Atlas
that.
Atlas owns the restaurant?
Going into this, even though he's like the top restaurateur in Boston.
And she didn't know. Like, she didn't know that her first love was the top restaurateur in Boston.
She didn't know. Even though she moved to Boston, allegedly this comes out later, she moved to Boston because she knew that he was planning to go to Boston after he was done with his like tour of duty in the army or whatever. So I'm like, wait a minute, none of this is adding up. So she sees him, she realizes it's him, she excuses herself to the bathroom and he goes back there and they like have a little talk and he's like, I see you're with this person. And is everything okay? And it seems good. And he's like, well, let me just, you know, give you my number. And she's like, okay, I'm not gonna need that, but thank you. And he kind of like slips it into her cell phone case behind the cell phone case. And then she goes back out there. Whatever happens, happens. And then at some point or other, the cell phone case like pops open. And so Ryle discovers that she has this guy's phone number. And he's very mad about it. He's just like, why do you have this? And like, why is it hidden in here? What are you doing? And she's just trying to be like, it's okay. He just gave it to me just in case.
Now, these are adults, right? These are people in their in their 30s.
Yes. And so she's just like, you know, it's nothing like, I don't have any relationship with this person. You don't have to worry about it. And he's like, are you sure? And she's just like, yes. And he just seems mad and leaves. But it's just like, okay, so there's all these red flags coming about where he's being very possessive and very jealous of this person who was her first love, but like they haven't had any contact since high school. So,
and how long have they been dating at this point?
And they've been dating, I don't know, like a month or something.
A month.
It's like very quick. It's like we're not really sure of the time frame.
Now, here's the thing, Laura. This is all very juicy.
Yeah.
It's also, right? It's juicy.
It is.
But it's also so stupid.
It is. You're like, well, why? I mean, why is any of this happening? Why doesn't she just literally tell him what's going on? Like, hey, I went to this restaurant. I didn't realize this guy was going to be there, even though I should have realized it's his restaurant because he's in all the papers all the time. Like, it's he's a big deal in the restaurant.
All right. Well, we got to cut to forward to the headlines here. Eventually, Ryle starts doing violence, right?
Right. So, like, it's always, at first, it's kind of like he is burning something and he, for some reason, goes in with his bare hand to grab it. Mm. And she's just like, what are you doing trying to grab it with no pot holder? And she's, like, trying to, like, stop him from doing it. And he, like, hits her away. And so she, like, falls on the ground and everything breaks and everything's, like, burning and whatever. Then he's immediately like, oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to do that, blah, 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 blah. And she just kind of like explains that one away, like, well, I shouldn't have been there in his way or whatever. And everybody's like, well, yeah, yes and no, but okay. And then I forget when this is finally revealed, but I think it's after she's already like decided she's going to leave him, where Jenny Slate is the one that reveals that this guy has murdered their brother.
Oh, well,
so there's like a whole.
That's something you. That's something you should know.
It's like this is all coming from his traumatic past, but he has murdered one of their siblings.
Yeah.
Because he found a gun. You know, the dad had the gun in his bedroom or whatever, and they were playing cowboys and Indians, and he gets it and shoots the kid because he didn't realize it was a real gun.
And yet he's still a neurosurgeon.
Yeah, she's kind of like, I saw from that day on, like, that his, he was just, like, dying inside. And when he met you, he became this, like, real person again. And so I was like, yay, but also.
Not when he graduated from medical school.
Right. So you're like, okay, I don't know why we're trying to, like, tie everything to that, especially when it's not explained, at least in the movie. Maybe it's more explained in the book up front, and I think he's the one to reveal it in the book. Yeah.
All right. Whatever. Look. I recognize that the romance genre is not necessarily known for its realism, right? Like these kinds of weird coincidences, sort of generic character types. This stuff happens. I mean, you know, there's a lot of bare-chested horseback riding, and there's all kinds of stuff that doesn't happen in real life,
right? But even in like, let's say, a more modern novel where it's like, yeah, this is a clearly genre romance, it would be like, okay, the meet cute is gonna be actually cute. It's gonna be in a bakery and you're both trying to order the same last cupcake or something. And it's like, I can just, you know, suspend my disbelief for that, but
right. That could happen. Here's what I'm going to float here, right?
Okay.
Like this, you know, domestic abuse is obviously an ongoing and a social problem and has been for since the dawn of domesticity, right? So I can see how a popular book and film that addresses this issue would make, you know, tens of millions of dollars at the box office, because it's something that I think a lot of women can relate to, right? Right? So it's like, okay, that it makes sense. However, I don't understand why it has to be a dumb movie about violence against women. You know, it doesn't make sense to me.
I think the whole part about like the fact that it comes out so late in the movie that he's had this past trauma, trying to sort of pin all of his violence on that. It's like, that doesn't really explain anything. If he did this when he was 6 years old and has never had therapy since then, I mean, of course he's a violent individual, but like I feel like this would have come out much sooner and in so many other ways that she would have been like, yo, I can't even stay here with you for one night because you're a dangerous person.
Well, and it's interesting too that you know because you mentioned the father being violent against her mother, so she's got an enabler sort of codependent background, right, for this sort of thing.
Yeah. And I think,
which again,
we're kind of supposed to buy that as the reason why she's like ignoring all of these red flags. because she watched her mom and dad do this for so many years and the mom never even thought about leaving. So it's like, okay, I can see that. I'm trying to like understand that and use that more as the reason why she's staying with this character. But it's also kind of like they're just trying to push him so much as like, well, he's a neurosurgeon and he's a handsome
neurosurgeon
dude, and like, yeah, I mean, who wouldn't want to marry a neurosurgeon who's hot?
Sure. Why? But okay, here's the $1 million question. The $80 million question at this point. Why is this movie popular?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like it does hit some emotional scenes where I found myself like tearing up, and I felt bad for this person because I guess I felt like, you know, if this was my friend going through this, I would see why she's attracted to this person. I would see why she would make excuses for this person, especially given her history. And I wish that we would have had more of like the Jenny Slate character kind of doing this, where she was like, I understand that you're attracted to him. He's an attractive fellow, even though he's my brother, and I don't want to think about that. Like, I get it. But as your friend, which is the one pivotal scene, she's like, as your friend, if you stay with this person, I will never speak to you again because he is dangerous. But I'm like, the whole thing that doesn't make any sense to me is just why this family as a whole has not had like some kind of therapy sessions together to be like, well, right, you shouldn't be dating and you shouldn't be in relationships and like none of this is okay.
So what I seem to be gleaning here is that it does accidentally stumble into some sort of core emotional truths,
right,
and that,
yes,
and that people who have experienced this sort of an abusive relationship, which is a lot of people, can relate to it, even if it is stupid.
Right. Yes.
Am I right there? I think I hit it on the head.
Yes. And you're also really waiting for this Atlas character to come forward more, and it just kind of cuts off right where they're about to like, maybe it's time for them to have a relationship again. So you're just like, you know, there is a sequel. And so I'm sure that's going to be another movie as well.
Well, okay. That's the thing. It's like, obviously like It Ends With Us is the latest sort of schlock saga. You know, people made fun of 50 Shades of Grey, but that was three movies. Yep. People made fun of Twilight, but that was, I don't know, 8 movies, 4 movies. I don't know how many, right, but you know, no one's going to argue that those were good books, yet they touched some sort of nerve. And would you say that this It Ends With Us stuff is Lily Blossom Bloom? There's a florist named Lily Blossom Bloom. Would you is this doing the same thing? Is it happening again?
I think so. Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess we're a pop culture publication and a pop culture podcast, and you got to stay on top of every development.
Exactly.
All right. Well, Laura Roberts, thank you so much for describing what sounds to me like the most ridiculous movie of the year. It Ends With Us, and it's popular, and now you know. Just stay away from abusive neurosurgeons on rooftops.
Exactly.
All right. Thank you so much. All right. Thank you so much, Laura Roberts. It was great to talk to you about It Ends With Us. It was great that someone else got to see that movie and not me. It's just not my genre, but I understand that it's very popular, and we try to cover what is popular and relevant on Book and Film Globe. As well, we talked to Pablo Gallaga about Alien Romulus, which is a big hit, even though true Alien fans don't seem to put it at the top of the list of the franchise. It is a franchise that isn't going anywhere, and Pablo had some great insights about that as well. I am Neil Pollack. I am the non-xenomorphic editor-in-chief of Book and Film Globe, www.bookandfilmglobe.com. If you like the show, leave us a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to it. And if you like the site, well, just keep coming back and reading and enjoying it. And I thank you so much for your patronage and for your contributions is just a person on the planet who enjoys good commentary about the pop culture that we are constantly immersed in. Thank you so much. We're going to take a couple of weeks off now. It is the dog days of summer, and I'm going to go sit under a tree. I haven't decided which tree yet, but I'm going to pick one somewhere in the world and think about pop culture. And I'll be back very soon with another episode and more content on Book and Film Globe. Have a great one.
original production. The Bookhouse is an independent bookstore with two locations in New Jersey, Millburn and Long Branch. Are you the guy who says they like to support indie bookstores? Good. Then be that guy. Come shop at the Bookhouse. Books, puzzles, games, coffee, cards, live author events, comedy nights, and most important, a real sense of community where actual human beings engage with one another. The Bookhouse in downtown Millburn and at Pier Village in Long Branch. That's the Bookhouse. Independent, local, quaint as fuck. Follow us on Instagram and come visit our stores.